is having this as its foundation. So when devotees don't get this point, or if they refuse to accept any portion of this due to misunderstandings or whatever, then the entire, suppose you compare their acceptance of Krishna consciousness to a building, this is the foundation. And if the foundation, if it's not firmly fixed, that is like putting a bomb in the foundation. It's not putting a bomb in the 10th floor or 11th floor. It's putting a bomb in the foundation. And if a bomb explodes in the foundation, the whole building will collapse. So this is a very, very important element in our acceptance of, in our individual and collective acceptance of the validity of Krishna consciousness. So what I will do is, there are 5 days, and Maharaj wanted me to speak longer initially, but I had, sorry? Longer, 3 hours. He wanted me to speak longer, but in my experience, at least for me, in my experience, I felt that 90 minutes a day would be enough. Definitely not 3 hours, because these are philosophical issues, and usually it takes time to understand. Some of the things will take time to assimilate, but it is very much worth it. So I have collected some material from the predecessor acharyas, and the first 4 days I will speak on Veda Apaurushayatva, and the 5th day I will speak about an essential Brahmanical virtue called Astikya. When Lord Krishna lists the 9 symptoms of a Brahmana, a bona fide Brahmana, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, this is one of the features, Astikya. Astikya means accepting the Vedas as being axiomatically true. So now what this is, we'll see that later. So, 3 or 4 days I will spend on Veda Apaurushayatva directly, and then 2 or 1 day, depending on how it goes, the last 2 days or the last 1 day, I will talk about Astikya. I had written extensively about Astikya, in which later appeared in a certain document. So I will take material from what I had written earlier also. Okay, regarding Veda Apaurushayatva, I'll begin by quoting Prabhupada. This is from his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 2, Text 31. Is it 4931? Canto 4, Chapter 2, Text 31. The text is, Esha eva hi lokanam shivah panthah sanatana yam purve cha anusantatasthur yat pramanam janardhanaha. The Vedas give the eternal regulative principles for auspicious advancement in human civilization, which have been rigidly followed in the past. The strong evidence of this principle is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is called Janardhana, the well-wisher of all living entities. Prabhupada's purport, I'll read an excerpt. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna has claimed that He is the father of all living entities regardless of form. There are 8,400,000 different species of life forms, and Lord Krishna claims that He is the father of all. Because the living entities are parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are all sons of the Lord, and for their benefit, because they are hovering under the impression that they can lord it over material nature, the Vedas are given to them for their guidance. Therefore, the Vedas are called Apaurusheya, for they are not written by any man or demigod, including the first living creature, Brahma. Brahma is not the creator or author of the Vedas. He is also one of the living beings in this material world. Therefore, he does not have the power to write or speak the Vedas independently. Every living entity within this material world is subject to four deficiencies. He commits mistakes. He accepts one thing for another. He cheats and he has imperfect senses. The Vedas, however, are not written by any living creature within this material world. Therefore, they are said to be apaurusheya. No one can trace out the history of the Vedas. Of course, modern human civilization has no chronological history of the world or the universe, and it cannot present actual historical facts older than 3000 years. But no one has traced out when the Vedas were written, because they were never written by any or spoken by men or demigods who are products of this material creation. But Bhagavad Gita is apaurusheya, for it is not spoken by any human being or any demigod of this material creation. It was spoken by Lord Krishna, who is beyond the material creation. That is accepted by such stalwart scholars as Shankaracharya, not to speak of other acharyas such as Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya. Shankaracharya has accepted that Narayana and Krishna are transcendental. And in Bhagavad Gita also, Lord Krishna has established, Aham sarvasya prabho matta sarvam pravartate. I am the origin of everything. Everything emanates from me. This material creation, including Brahma and Shiva and all the demigods, has been created by him, for everything has emanated from him. He also says that the purpose of the Vedas is to understand him. Vedaischa sarvai rahameva vedya. He is the original Veda Vit, or knower of the Vedas, and Vedanta Krit, or compiler of Vedanta. Brahma is not the compiler of the Vedas. So this is an important point to note, that the Vedas are not human, nor are they written by any superhuman being within this material creation. Even the demigods, they are also defective, because they are part and parcel of the material world. Krishna states in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that there is no living being within this universe, human or celestial, who is not free from the three modes of material nature. So the Vedas are not composed by any of the demigods or even human beings. Strictly speaking, the Vedas are not composed even by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. They are not composed in this sense. It is not that the Vedas at a certain point came into existence, and before that the Vedas did not exist. The Vedas always existed. Just as the Supreme Lord always exists, just as the Jivatmas always exist, just as the internal potency of the Lord always exists, just as the spiritual world always exists, just as the material world always exists, the Vedas also exist always. They are eternal in this sense, that they are literally eternal. They were not composed even by Krishna at any point, just as Krishna never created the Jivatmas at any point in time. So, traditionally when they say the Vedas are apaurusheya, this is what they mean. They're not composed, literally not composed, not even composed by God at any point in time. We accept that. Actually, we accept that, because we accept the Vedas as sound expansion of the Supreme Lord. They're expanded from the Supreme Lord in the form of sound. And the Vedas are not different from the Supreme Lord, being his sound expansion. So, the Vedas are spotless. They do not have any of the defects that are there amongst human beings. But why do we have to accept the Vedas in the first place? So, to understand that, let us first have a look at Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He summarized the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu under 10 categories called the Dashamula. This is his framework for teaching Krishna consciousness, his way of presenting the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Dashamula refers to 10 foundational teachings, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur has presented very, very systematically each of them. So I will deal with the first text of the Dashamula. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote a book called Gauranga Smaranamangala Stotram. In Sanskrit, more than 100 verses on the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He summarized the Lord's pastimes, and within that he included 13 verses, 13 texts. In these 13 texts he presents Dashamool. He has also presented Dashamool in a variety of other literatures. They also appear in a famous book of Bhaktivinod called Jaiva Dharma. He has also summarized this Dashamool in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, another famous book called Harinam Chintamani. There are separate essays he wrote in so many places. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's preferred means of presenting Krishna consciousness systematically. So in the first out of 10 topics, he has allocated the first topic to this, Veda Pramanya. Why to accept the Vedas? Now, as I mentioned, in amongst those 100 or so verses in Gauranga Leela Smaranamangala Stotra, he has allocated 13 shlokas, and within those 13, the first shloka is a summary of the entire body of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. From Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, we learned that the first text had to be memorized or had to be understood by devotees who had joined the Gaudiya Math. Amnayah Praha. This is how he spells out Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. The Vedas say, Veda includes literatures which are in pursuance of the Vedic teachings. Amnayah Praha. They preeminently present. Their main focus, their most important teachings are Amnayah Praha, Tattvam Harimiha Paramam. The first teaching is that the supreme absolute truth is Lord Hari. Tattvam Harimiha Paramam, Sarvashaktim. And Lord Hari, he is omnipotent. Everything is his potency. Everything other than him is his potency. He has internal and external potencies, marginal potencies. The living entities are also his potencies. Tattvam Harimiha Paramam Sarvashaktim Rasabdhim. He is an ocean of rasa. His prime feature in the spiritual world is he is simply exchanging rasas which emanate out of Prema Bhakti. And when we are situated in Prema Bhakti, then the topic of Bhakti Rasa comes in. So various constitutional relationships living entities have with the Supreme Lord, and he reciprocates with them. And this is, of course, his natural, sweet pastime. And basically, this is what he's doing in the spiritual world. So this is one of his fundamental features. In fact, the most important feature of the Supreme Lord. Tattvam Harimiha Paramam Sarvashaktim Rasabdhim. Then he talks about the jivas. Tattvam Harimiha Paramam Sarvashaktim Rasadhim Tad Bhinnam Shamscha Jivan. And the living entities are his separated portions. Some of them are Prakriti Kavalitan. Some of them are under the clutches of Prakriti. Tad Vimuktamscha Bhavat. And some others are freed from the clutches of Prakriti. This is corresponding to their attitudes. If they are seva unmukha, if they are interested in serving him, then they are freed from material bondage. Otherwise, they are in material bondage. Prakriti kavalitan tad vimuktamscha bhavat bheda bheda prakasham sakalamapi hare. Everything that we see, the living entities as well as material creation, everything is simultaneously one with and different from Lord Hari. Achintya bheda bheda tattva. Bheda bheda prakasham sakalam api hare sadhanam shuddha bhaktim. The means to attain the highest perfection is shuddha bhakti. Sadhanam shuddha bhaktim sadhyam tat pritim. And the goal, the highest perfection of life is to attain pure love for Lord Hari. సాధ్యం తద్ ప్రీతిమేవేత్తి ఉపదిశతి హరిర్గౌరచంద్రో భజేతం. లార్డ్ హరి, లార్డ్ గౌరచంద్ర, హీ టీచెస్ దిస్ అండ్ వీ వర్షిప్ హిమ్, ఐ వర్షిప్ హిమ్. సో దిస్ ఇస్ హిస్ సమరీ వర్స్ అండ్ దెన్ హీ ప్రెసెంటెడ్ 10 ఫుల్ శ్లోకస్, వెరీ వెల్ డీప్లీ థాట్ అవుట్. ఎవ్రీ వర్డ్ ఇన్ దిస్ ఇస్ వెల్ థాట్ అవుట్, ఎవ్రీ వర్డ్. భక్తి వినోద్ ఠాకూర్స్ ఇంటెలిజెన్స్ ఇస్ ఎక్స్ట్రాడినరీ, ఎక్స్ట్రాడినరీ ఇన్సైట్. వెరీ డిఫికల్ట్ టు కంపేర్ హిమ్ విత్ ఎనీ ఆర్డినరీ వైష్ణవ ఆచార్య, ఈవెన్ ఎక్స్ట్రాడినరీ ఎంపవర్డ్ బై లార్డ్ చైతన్య మహాప్రభు టు బీ ఏబుల్ టు రివైవ్ ది అండర్స్టాండింగ్ ఆఫ్ కృష్ణ కాన్షియస్నెస్ అండ్ ప్రాక్టీస్ అండ్ ప్రాపగేషన్ ఆఫ్ కృష్ణ కాన్షియస్నెస్ జస్ట్ యాజ్ ఇట్ వాస్ డ్యూరింగ్ లార్డ్ చైతన్యస్ టైమ్. Within the middle of a mess, Bhakti Vinod Thakur appeared at a time when the Gaudiya Vaishnava Society was in a mess. And to present that, extraordinary potency. So anyway, he presented the Dashamala in 10 shlokas. Each one is a detailed exposition of each of these. The first topic is Amnaya Praha. The Vedas say. So by that, Bhakti Vinod indicates that we accept the authority of the Vedas. So we will look at his first text and we will look at a commentary which he had arranged for to be written by one of his admirers, Shitikantha Vachaspati, who had written a commentary on these shlokas. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had these 13 texts. So it has one preliminary text, which is a summary. Then you have 10 texts and 2 texts on conclusion. What do we do after we know this? So those 13 texts along with a commentary was printed by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in his Sanskrit version of his journal Sajjan Toshani. And that is what you'll see there. What you see up there is the first of the Dashamool texts. So I will read and explain that, and after that I will go to another important book in our line called Vedanta Syamantaka, which was written by Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan's spiritual master, Diksha Guru, Radha Damodar Goswami. Let us see how much we can cover. Okay. Do you see the text Swatah Siddho Veda? Okay, this is the text. Swatah Siddho Vedo Haridayeta Veda Pravrutitaha Pramanam Satpraptam Pramiti Vishayan Tan Navavidhan తథా ప్రత్యక్షాది ప్రమితి సహితం సాధయతి నః నయుక్తిస్తర్కాఖ్యా ప్రవశతి తథా శక్తిరహిత. హీ బిగిన్స్ బై సేయింగ్ దట్ ద వేద ఇస్ స్వతః సిద్ధ. స్వతః సిద్ధ, దిస్ ఇస్ అ వెరీ ఇంపార్టెంట్ కాన్సెప్ట్. స్వతః సిద్ధ మీన్స్ సెల్ఫ్ ఎవిడెంట్, సెల్ఫ్ పర్ఫెక్ట్, సెల్ఫ్ ఎవిడెంట్. యు సీ దర్ ఆర్ డిఫరెంట్ టైప్స్ ఆఫ్ There are different methodologies we use to gain knowledge. Commonly they can be summarized as coming under 3 categories. One is called sense perception. Another one is called logical inference. And the third one is acceptance of authority. This is a simple way of putting it. Shabda, technically. Acceptance of authority. Aptavakya grahana. Acceptance of a reliable authority. So sense perception is one way of acquiring knowledge. I see someone steal someone's shoes. I see that in front of my eyes. So I'm seeing it. My knowledge of that act of theft is verified by my direct sense perception. Pratyaksha. Then you have another type of knowledge. We come to conclusions not based on seeing, but by logical inference. Like for instance, I came here, I left my shoes there. That's right. And I came here. But suppose after this I go and I don't see my shoes there. Then I'm looking, I don't see my shoes. But then suddenly I notice someone wearing shoes exactly like my shoes. It looks exactly like my shoes. And nobody in Baroda, in this temple, when I came here, I didn't notice anyone have a shoe like mine. So then what do I think? I'll think maybe he took my shoes. Now I did not see the act of his taking my shoes. But I am coming to a logical conclusion, not based on direct sense perception. Because usually that's what happens. The standard example given to explain logical inferences, when you see some smoke, suppose you're traveling and you see a hill, and on the other side of the hill you see some smoke. So then you think that something must be burning on the other side of the hill, because smoke comes from fire, which I have seen in my kitchen, I have seen in the street, but I'm not able to see the fire burning on the other side of the hill. But I connect it. Within my experience, fire leads to smoke. Every time I've seen it in my life, fire leads to smoke, fire leads to smoke, fire leads to smoke. So when I see smoke, there must be fire, even though I don't see the fire. So this is called logical inference. You infer based on logic. So this is another way of coming to conclusions. It could be valid. Just as direct sense perception could be valid, logical inference could also be valid. Now, the problem is, it is not always valid. And we will come to that when we come to Vedanta Syavantaka, you will see that. And the third way of coming to a conclusion is by listening to an authority. You can accept an authority. An authority says that this is how it is. Suppose an authority, a reliable authority says, no one stole your shoes. It was actually there, but due to inattention, you didn't notice that it was there. So then I accept it, right? And that authority says, you go back and see, it's still there. So I go back and see, it's there. So acceptance of a reliable authority has been considered a third category of knowledge, acquisition of knowledge. So the Veda comes within the third category, and it is the highest within the third category. It's considered the highest. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the Veda is Swatasiddha. It is self-perfect. It is self-perfect means that we don't depend on anything other than the Veda for establishing that it's valid. It is valid. It's valid by itself. It is valid. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually says this in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says that the Veda is Swatasiddha, Pramana Shiromani. He says this is the crest jewel of all ways to acquire knowledge. And he explains what that means. It means that we accept the Veda as being fully correct. That is full-fledged acceptance of the Veda. The Veda is self-perfect. Svatasiddho Vedo Haridaita Veda Prabhritaha Pramanam Satpraptam Pramati Vishayan Tan Navavidhan. And it has been coming down through the disciplic succession. It has been coming down through the disciplic succession. Such as Lord Brahma, who was directly blessed by Lord Hari. We learn from the Bhagavatam that Tene Brahma Hrida Yadikavaye. Krishna, he imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Lord Brahma. And then it's been coming down. Brahma taught his disciples, and those disciples, they taught their disciples, and it's been coming down. So the Veda has been coming down from disciplic succession, and originally they were manifested by Lord Hari. So in this way, it has been coming down. The Vedas teach 9 topics. They are the rest of the Dashamool. The first point in Dashamool is the Veda is authority. The remaining 9 topics are all teachings of the Vedas. So Lord Chaitanya's first teaching is you accept the Vedas. What do the Vedas teach? They teach 9 different things. Those 9 things, I spelled it out already. That Lord Hari is supreme. He is omnipotent. He is a reservoir of rasas and so on. Pramiti vishayan tan navavidhan tatha pratyakshadi pramiti sahitam sadhayati naha. So we accept. So when we accept the Veda, along with sense perception, etc., which is favorable to the Vedas, then that helps us understand the Supreme Lord. It helps us understand these nine topics. Na yuktis tarkakhya pravishati tatha shakti rahita. But to understand any of these nine teachings of the Vedas, mere logic will not help. The idea is that if you reject Vedic authority, simply using your logic, you can never understand the nature of God. You can never understand the nature of the living entities. You can never understand the nature of the material world. You can never understand the means to transcend material existence. In order to understand the Supreme Lord, in order to make sense of the cosmic situation, you have to accept Vedic authority. That is the point. That is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's point. Because logic cannot enter into this matter, shakti rahita, he says. He says that because it has no potency. We will look at the commentary to understand this. Okay, the commentary begins by saying, Atha, okay, you should go down. Yeah? Atha, tad aprakrita dashamulam, tattvam, vishinashti, dashashlokai. So this transcendental dashamula, after Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the summary shloka, he presents this transcendental dashamula, this transcendental truth. On dashamula, he specifies, he clarifies, he characterizes this, he presents all the details in 10 shlokas. Swatah siddha iti, beginning with the verse which starts with Swatah siddha. Asya mahato bhutasya nishvasitametad rig ityadi vachanena veda eva swatah siddha pramanam. The Veda is understood to be the self-perfect source of valid knowledge. This we understand from various authoritative statements, such as Asya mahato bhutasya nishvasitam etad rig veda, atharva veda. That's a statement in the Upanishads, that the four Vedas, along with the other literature which are in line with the Vedas, have been breathed out by the great being. The great being refers to Mahavishnu. He breathed them out. The idea is that just as breathing is part of a person, similarly the Veda is also part of him. He's breathed out. And he manifests the Vedas as they are. I'll get back to this to explain what is the meaning of this. Tatra Brahma Devanam Pratama Sambhuvetyadi Mundaka Vakya Anusarena Bhagavat Priyanuchara Brahma Prabhruti Taha Yani Veda Vakyani Shishta Sampradaya Pratani Tanyeva Veda Padavachyani Na Anyani Kalpita Vachanani. So then what are the Vedas? The Vedas are a collection of statements which have been handed down through a disciplic line which begins with Lord Brahma, who is a very dear servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Veda has been coming down in parampara. So these statements are called the Vedas. Not any manufactured statements can be considered to be Veda. So the idea is this, that the four Vedas have been transmitted through an oral transmission, through sound. The teacher actually, the Brahmana teacher, he actually trains the students to memorize a part of the Vedas. So that's why if you go to any of these Veda Pathashala, or traditionally Brahmanas would have to teach their own children. Specific Brahmana families had to preserve specific portions of the Vedas. Now there are different ways of transmitting knowledge. In the modern day, they how do they transmit information? If it's an electronic file, you copy it. If it is a printed one, you photocopy it. Or you recompose it and print it. But the four Vedas are called Shruti. The rest of Vedic literature are called Smriti. Sometimes there are other names also used for specific portions of the Vedas. But generally they would simply categorize it as Shruti and Smriti. Now the Shruti portion of the Veda, it is audio. It is sound. So when you say that Lord Vishnu, or we understand the original form of Lord Vishnu, Krishna, he imparted Vedic knowledge into Brahma, it means that the Supreme Lord made Brahma hear the Veda. Just like you listen to some song. A song is sung in a certain manner. And you can transmit that song only through audio. You can write it and you can notate it. There are certain ways of notating how to sing a song. But even then, for accurate transmission, you need to transmit it. Sound has to be transmitted by, one has to sing it and he has to train this person to sing it in the same manner and then it goes down. It's like in South India, there was one great Vaishnava musician, Annamacharya from Tirupati. And he composed songs. In fact, he had his grandson. He had him put them into tune. So there are certain traditional tunes. You have to sing them only in those traditional tunes. You can sing them in your own way differently, but if you cannot say this is Annamacharya's tune of his own song. So that is coming down through a parampara. Similarly, the four Vedas are being transmitted through parampara. The Shruti portion is actually sound. In fact, you are supposed to recite it according to accent. There are various accents. You cannot just recite it in any manner. So it is sound. So the four Vedas have been coming down through the parampara like that. The Smriti literature, there are authorized Smriti literature. They explain the meaning, the heart of Shruti. And periodically, the Lord empowers various sages, or through his incarnations as Vyasadev, he may paraphrase the Smriti content. He may paraphrase it, he may just rewrite it, like Mahabharata is manifested. We have a Mahabharata edition now. But there was a Mahabharata before, a different Mahabharata, when the Lord's pastimes with the Pandavas happened before. Similarly, just as we have a Ramayana now. There was a Ramayana before, the previous time Lord Ramchandra appeared, there was a different Ramayana. And the time before that when he appeared, there was a different Ramayana. So it goes on like that. But if you take one shloka from Valmiki Ramayana, what we have today, and you recite it, it may not exactly tally with the exact wording with the previous Ramayana. Because that was rewritten. So, for Smriti, the Lord arranges for them to be redone, paraphrased, rewritten, reworded. But the four Vedas are not like that. The Shruti content is intact. It is as it is. The Varna Krama is intact. Ishavasyamidam sarvam. If you go and recite this in any of the Brahmandas to a learned Brahmana, they will all tell you it's Ishopanishad. But if you recite something from some Padma Purana or something, Jalaja Navalakshani, you recite it, they may not be able to exactly spot where it comes from because it goes on, the Lord arranges for it to be paraphrased and rewritten and rewritten and rewritten. But a learned person who knows the meaning of the Veda will immediately accept it as valid. Yes, it is valid. But he will not be able to spot it. Okay, it's here or it's there. So, the Veda is sound. The four Vedas are sound. But anyway, this is only a technical distinction. There is no distinction in terms of the meanings. It is not that the Veda is teaching something The four Vedas are teaching something that is not presented in the Smriti content. In fact, in Kali Yuga, we would benefit more by studying the Smriti content rather than the Shruti content. It is easier for us to understand. And therefore, Vyasadeva has presented Mahabharata, the Puranas, and he presented within the Mahabharata, Bhagavad Gita, he has transcribed and put it. He has presented the Srimad Bhagavatam as the final literature. It's the final literature which clarifies the meaning of the Vedas. So, the Vedas are, the statements of the Vedas, they are Swatah Siddha, they are self-perfect. And they teach these nine topics. Tani Swatah Siddha Veda Vachanani Pratyakshadi Pramana Sahakarena Nah Asmakam Sambandhe Tani Navavidhani Prameyani Sadhayanti. So they teach these nine truths. Tathacha Shri Jiva Virachita Tattvasandarbha. In this regard, Shri Jiva Goswami has stated in Shri Tattvasandarbha, Tatra Purushasya Brahmadi Dosha Chatushtaya Dushtatva Sutaram Achintya Alaukika Vastu Sparsha Ayogyatva Cha Tat Pratyakshadhyanyapi Pratyakshadhinyapi Sadoshani Tatastani Na Pramanani Tyanadi Siddha Purusha Paramparasu Sarvalaukika Alaukika Gyan Danatvad Aprakrita Vachana Lakshno Vedeva Asmakam Sarvatita Sarvashraya Sarvachintya Ascharya Swabhavam Vastu Vividishatam Pramanam. This is a statement from Jiva Goswami, which needs explanation and clarification. Srila Jiva Goswami writes one summary verse at the beginning of his Sandarbhas. The Sandarbhas are Jiva Goswami's analysis of the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam has been analyzed and presented in great detail by Jiva Goswami in six volumes called Shat Sandarbha. Six theses, as Prabhupada says in his Chaitanya Charitamrita commentary. So the very first Sandarbha is called Tattva Sandarbha. And it talks about the importance, of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Then it presents in general, a general summary of the teachings of Bhagavatam. So he is, Jiva Goswami is a very, very astute, logical teacher. So he begins by saying, first of all, what he does is he simply states that Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. He expands himself into the various Narayana forms and enjoys in the spiritual world. His effulgence is the Brahmajyoti, which is explained in some of the scriptures. He expands himself into his localized plenary form called Paramatma, and he enters into the material universes. May that Lord grant me pure love for his lotus feet. So he puts one prayer like that. That itself is a summary of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. And then immediately after that, he says, this is what he says. So now in this regard, human beings, because human beings are defective, they make mistakes, they are subject to illusion, they have cheating propensity, their senses are inefficient. We will look at this in detail later. Therefore, they are defective. So they cannot understand the truth about what they are doing in the material world. And because they have all these defects, their sense perception, their logic, etc., they are incapable of touching the absolute truth. They are incapable of touching the absolute truth, which is inconceivable and which is alaukika, which is beyond the material world. Achintya alaukika vastu sparsha ayogyatvat. We cannot touch it. We cannot touch it. By our sense perception, by our logic, we cannot understand the nature of God. Because you can only use logic based on what you have seen. Logic is based on previous sense perception. We should always keep in mind. How do I know someone steals my shoes? Because previously I have seen it. How do I know that there is a fire on the other side of a mountain? Because of my previous sense perception. Previously I have seen that fire leads to smoke. So therefore I know that. But previously, within our memory, we have never seen God. Within our memory, we have never experienced the Supreme Absolute Truth. So therefore, logical inference will have no role in helping us understand the Absolute Truth. Tat pratyaksha dinyapi sadoshani. So therefore, they are all defective. You cannot use sense perception and logic and so on to understand the nature of God. Tatastani na pramanani iti anadisiddha purusha paramparasu. Sarva laukika laukika jnana nidanatvad. Aprakrita vachana lakshana. Aprakrita vachana lakshana vedaha eva asmakam sarvatita sarvashraya sarvachintyascharya svabhavam vastu vividishatam pramanam. So for us who are interested in understanding the Absolute Truth, which is beyond everything, which is the shelter of everything, which is inconceivable to everyone, and which is most wonderful, for those of us who want to understand the nature of that Absolute Truth, our only means is to accept the Veda, which is a collection of transcendental statements, and which contains knowledge both about this world and about what is beyond this world, and which has been coming down through a disciplic succession of perfect transmitters from time immemorial, from beginningless time. So for those of us who are interested in understanding the nature of God, we have no other choice. You can only understand God the way God reveals Himself. You cannot come up with your own way of understanding God. So by Parishesha Nyaya, it is not logic, it is not sense perception, it is not logic, then the only other option you have left is reliable authority. And within reliable authorities also, the Veda is the only literature which claims to even talk about the nature of God. So by the process of elimination, you have no other option but to choose this. At least for the sake of investigation, you can only choose this. You cannot choose any other means of understanding the nature of God. Tatcha anumatam tarka apratishthana adityado. And this has been logically inferred by Vyasadeva himself, that you can only understand the nature of the Supreme Being from the Vedas, because logic has no foundation of its own. Logic has no foundation of its own. You can use logic to say anything. You can use logic to establish there is God. You can use logic to say there is no God also. Like Ramanujacharya says, if you don't accept God simply by observing this world, you can come to the conclusion, okay, it was designed, but maybe it was designed by a committee. How do you know? Okay, I can accept that design indicates a designer. But how do you establish there is only one designer? And how do you establish that designer is transcendental to material cosmos? So Ramanujacharya says that, okay, there is a design, there could be, but you cannot establish it. The reason why Ramanujacharya says that is, there was a class of philosophers called the Nayayikas, who argued, very, very strongly, they tried to make this case that there is God, and you can understand that God exists simply through sense perception and logic. This is intelligent design from India. You know, the intelligent design theory is not a new theory. It is very, very powerfully presented by one Udayana Acharya, who is one of the most, he was a brilliant thinker. He was a very, very brilliant thinker. And that was probably more than 1,000 years back now. He presented various arguments, trying to establish them, that there is a spirit soul, there is a God. But it is not possible to firmly point out. And therefore, we accept that, if you don't accept Vedic authority, you cannot understand the nature of God. Because He is beyond your sense perception. And because he's beyond your sense perception, naturally he'll be beyond your logic also. So you have no way out. If you don't accept Veda, you cannot talk about God. If you don't accept Veda, you cannot talk about God. So, our approach to theology is on the foundation of philosophy. This is very different from just other, it's very different from the world religions like Christianity, Judaism, Islam, where they come in and say, Jesus died for us. And they begin with that. We don't begin with things like that. We begin with sense perception, logic. We come to the conclusion that there's no other way out other than accepting a certain tradition which presents information about God. There is a philosophical, logical analysis. And then we come to that point. Now, this was very, very common in India. In India, you did not have all this brainless interreligious wars. They were debated out on the basis of philosophy. Intelligent people, intelligent thinkers, they would debate. And they followed standard rules of logic. It was intellectually strong. Tachanamatam tarka apratishthana dityadav. There are several statements such as the statement by Vyasadev, where he is also inferred that logic is foundationless by itself. So you cannot understand the nature of God unless you accept Shabda, a reliable authority. Specifically, you have to accept the Veda. Achintya khaluye bhava natam sarkena yojaye dityadav. And there are other statements that entities which are inconceivable, you cannot try to measure them using your sense, using your logic. Shastra yonitva dityado. And there are statements that knowledge about him can only come from Shastra. Shutestu shabda mulatva dityado. That you can understand the nature of God only if you accept Vedic authority. Rigvedam, Bhagavodhyemi, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, Atharvanam, Chaturtham, Itihasam, Puranam, Panchamam, Vedanam, Vedam, Ityadi. Tadevam, Itihasa Purana Yor, Vedatvam. This is a page in two columns. So I'm moving up. Siddham. Jiva Goswami also gives a quote from the Upanishads that which says, I have studied the four Vedas, Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, and I have studied the Itihasas and Puranas. I have studied the Itihasas and Puranas. So from this we understand that the Itihasas and Puranas, Itihasa refers to authentic histories like Valmiki Ramayana, Mahabharata, and Purana refers to the 18 Puranas. There are many people who used to argue that we accept the four Vedas as Vedas, but Itihasas and Puranas, we don't really accept them as Vedic. Even now there are people, for instance, the Dayananda Saraswati group, they will not accept the Itihasas and Puranas as being Vedic. And of course, there are all these academic fellows, they also don't accept the Smriti content as being Vedic, specifically Vyasadeva's writings and all. But we understand from, this is a statement from the Upanishad, I think it is from Chandogya Upanishad, which states that you have a student telling his teacher that I have actually studied the four Vedas. I have studied Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, and the fifth Veda known as Itihasa Purana. So now this has been elaborately brought out by Jiva Goswami in Tattva Sandarbha, where he explains that the fifth Veda means that it is of the same nature as the four Vedas. You have five fingers. So this fifth finger is of the same, it is of the nature of a finger. This is not, for instance, this is not an ear. This is not a nose. It is a finger. It has the same nature as the fingers. So he explains that fifth Veda, Itihasa Puranas or fifth Veda means, they have the same nature as the four Vedas. Of course, he explains, the Varna Krama will be different. In the four Vedas, the arrangement of syllables are intact. Whenever the Lord breathes out, after he manifests the material universe, when he breathes out Rig Veda, he will always breathe out, keeping in mind the syllables being intact. So Isha Upanishad is always Isha Upanishad. Similarly, Taittiriya Upanishad will always be Taittiriya Upanishad. Rig Veda Samhita will always be Rig Veda Samhita. Whereas when it comes to Mahabharata, Ramayana or the Puranas, things may get rewritten with different shlokas, different wordings. But it has the same nature as the original. It has the same nature as the four Vedas. So he points out that the Itihasas and Puranas are accepted as the fifth Veda. Brahmasutra Bhashya Rupasya Sarva Vedanta Sarabhutasya Mudha Jana Anadritasya Srimad Bhagavatasya Tu Sarva Purana Shreshtatvam Pratipaditam Tatraiva. And in that very literature, Tattva Sandarbha, it has been very firmly established by Srila Jiva Goswami that Srimad Bhagavatam is factually the commentary on the Brahma Sutra, the Vedanta Sutra. Now, the Vedanta Sutra is a very, very important work. The Vedanta Sutra is Vyasadeva's concise clarification of the teachings of the Upanishads. The Upanishads clarify the teachings of the four Vedas. The Upanishads are part of the four Vedas, but they are the final chapters within each of the four Vedas. And they are referred to separately because they talk about transcendence much more directly. So the Vedanta Sutra is an explanation of the Upanishads. The Srimad Bhagavatam is an explanation of Vedanta Sutra. The Vedanta Sutra is something like you have lower court judgments, high court judgments and Supreme Court judgments. Supreme Court judgments are generally very short. So the Vedanta Sutra is something like that. It's like a Supreme Court judgment. It's very short. It's only got some 550 concise statements. But it is Vyasadeva's own well-deliberated, careful, final clarification. And Srimad Bhagavatam is Vyasadeva's own explanation of Vedanta Sutra. So in Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami is explained how the Vedanta Sutra is explained in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sarva Vedanta Sarabhuta. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of the entire Vedanta. Vedanta refers to the Upanishads. Vedanta Sutra refers to Brahma Sutras. So it is an explanation of, or it is the essence of all the Upanishads. The Srimad Bhagavatam is not respected by foolish people. Mudha Jana Anadritasya Srimad Bhagavatasya. Foolish people, they don't understand the nature of Srimad Bhagavatam and they think it's just one of the many Puranas. But actually, it is the best amongst all the Puranas. This has been established by Jiva Goswami in Tattva Sandarbha. Ata Shri Krishna Chaitanya Shikshaya Swatasiddha Veda Vakyani Tadartha Nirnayaka Purana Itihasa Vachanani Tatha Vedanugata Pratyakshadi Prapta Jnanam Api Paramartha Nirnaye Pramanam Iti Spashtikritam. Thus it has been very, very clearly spelt out that according to the teachings of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the statements of the self-perfect Vedas, along with the statements of the Itihasas and Puranas, which determine the meaning of the Vedas, Tadartha Nirnayaka Purana Itihasa Vachanam, along with the knowledge that is acquired through sense perception and logic, which is in line with the Vedas, all of them are evidences for understanding spiritual truths. Now, this is a very, very compressed statement, and I'll have to explain it. The Vedic literature has its own internal methodology of presentation. It's not that it's all haphazard. The Vedas have been explained by the Upanishads. The Upanishads have been explained in Bhagavad Gita and later in Vedanta Sutra, in a higher sense in the Vedanta Sutra. And the Vedanta Sutra has been clarified in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is called Nirnayaka Nirnaya Sambandha. This is something our devotees who are trying to become scholars don't understand generally, and they create a mess. A quotation from some statement from some Anusamhita or some Skanda Purana or some statement from some Upanishad or from Yajurveda, that does not cancel anything that you learn from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. Because there's a certain way how the Vedic literatures have been organized. There are certain literatures which require clarification, and the Lord arranges for some other literatures to provide that clarification. And therefore this expression is used, Nirnayaka and Nirnaya. Nirnaya means that which needs to be clarified. Nirnayaka means that which does the work of clarification. So we say that Bhagavad Gita is the Nirnayaka of the Upanishads. Or you can put it the other way. The Upanishads are Nirnaya in relation to Bhagavad Gita. It means Bhagavad Gita clarifies the meaning of Upanishads. Upanishads don't clarify the meaning of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita clarifies the meaning of Upanishads. So when you are in some confusion, is the absolute truth personal or impersonal? One statement from Bhagavad Gita is stronger than 25 statements from the Upanishads. That is the whole point. Because this clarifies that. Similarly, the Vedanta Sutra is a clarification of the Upanishads and in fact the entire Vedic body. So statements from Vyasadeva's Vedanta Sutra are stronger than statements from the other texts. The Lord Himself arranges for the literatures to be presented in this manner. Similarly, the Itihasas and Puranas, they directly clarify the teachings of the Upanishads. They are Nirnayaka. So therefore here he states that the statements of the Vedas along with the Itihasas and Puranas, which are clarifying the meaning of those statements, they are also evidence. And then he says that knowledge which is received through sense perception and logic, but which is in line with the Vedas, that is also evidence. Mere sense perception is not counted as an evidence. That sense perception has to be in line with the Vedas. Therefore, Prabhupada said, man did not go to the moon. So even though you watch on TV that man is going somewhere, apparently, and they got so bewildered. Prabhupada, the whole America, you know, they're all saying that we went to moon yesterday. And it came in the newspaper. And New York Times had the first page. The full page was this. One step, what is that? One giant step for...
One small step for man and one great step for man.
Yeah. So this was their Mahavakya. Yeah. One great leap for mankind. So that thing was there, and they couldn't understand how Prabhupada could go on saying, no, it is false, it is false, it is false, it is false. They showed it on TV and Prabhupada said, this resembles some desert in America. And you know, he goes on saying this. Why? Because even if there is a contradiction between your sense perception and scripture, you should accept scripture. Even if there is a contradiction between sense perception and scripture, you should accept scripture. You can't say, no, it has been established by scientists. What is science? It's a combination of sense perception and logic. That is Western science. So when there's a... these are defective. First of all, these are defective. These are defective. Sense perception and logic are defective. So whenever we notice an apparent contradiction or a contradiction between what we have received from Vedic literature and sense perception or from logic, you have to side with scripture. That is the point. You have to side with scripture. That requires Brahmanical training. That firm faith that the Veda is correct. The whole world is wrong. Veda is correct. The whole world is wrong. Whole world. Harvard University is wrong. Oxford University is wrong. Cambridge is wrong. You name it. All the big shots. They're all wrong. They're all wrong. They're completely wrong. Like Prabhupada said in 1977, he told Tamal Krishna Maharaj in April in Bombay, you have to be firmly convinced that all these scholars, they're all big, big animals. If you're not convinced of this, your preaching will collapse. So these universities are big zoos. So there's no use in becoming affiliated with them and becoming partnered with them. My daughter is in Harvard. My daughter became an animal. That's what it means. That's what it means. That's basically what it means. So there's nothing great about it. In fact, we feel very ashamed. And like I conduct online correspondence courses, and one of the courses that I conduct is Sanskrit. And one devotee who's studying in a university, he told me, my university in America, my university is giving a credit for me taking up your course. So you are basically a professor in my university. And I said, this is a great dishonor to me. To be considered a professor in some mundane American university is a bad thing. It is not a great thing for me.
And then IIT in Chennai, I gave a lecture. How to overcome the IIT disadvantage.
Okay, I'll stop with this. There are a few more points, but I will deal with it tomorrow. And continue. It's already 5:40 according to my clock. Only slightly.
The fact that Veda, Narayana, and Sakshat may be more emphasized.
Yeah.
What are the implications of that? Because we find other Vedic schools that for them Narayana is of no import whatsoever, even though they're supposed to be Vedics.
They don't.
Yeah, I'm just holding a minute. In their expositions of Vedanta, although they come to very similar conclusions in Hare Iha Paramam, but their expositions of Vedanta are very different. So that's a completely different topic. And maybe that, but does that affect their understanding of Veda or Maharsha?
No.
And this is a very important area. In modern so-called scholars, they'll wipe the backside with the poetry of scholars. They just take it as axiomatic that Veda Purusha is nonsense.
Yeah.
They don't even bother discussing. Um,
But then in traditional Indian society, I think Buddhists, Jains will contest that. So I just hope that they don't.
In India, Jains and Buddhists, they are actually fallen out from the Brahminical society. Because they developed and they fought back. Some of the powerful critics of the Purva Mimamsa schools, and they were actually Buddhists who were previously Brahmanas and who had converted into Buddhism, having rejected Vedic authority. So Vaishnavas have fought back, but Shankarites, Vaishnavites, everybody has fought back. In India, it's something I will deal with, but it becomes more and more technical, so to some extent I will deal with it. But in India, but what was good news is that these objections are not new. For instance, the idea that modern academic scholars have that the Vedas are nonsense because they say something like Aditya Stupaha, the sun is a pillar. Somewhere in Yajurveda there's a statement like this. But these statements I have seen in Jayatirtha's writings. He says there are people who give this objection, that there are statements which are just apparently foolish statements which are found in the Vedas. And he himself gives, they are well aware of the extent of and the different types of criticisms. In fact, some of the criticisms I don't think even academic scholars have come up with. So they know what they're talking about. They know what they're talking about, and they've dealt with it. They've dealt with it. Something will come to that. Yes.
There was a statement that Shastra, Vedas are satsangha because it is bring out from the beginning.
Not that the Vedas are Swata Siddha because of that, but they are a manifestation of the Supreme Lord. Yes. How do we know the Vedas have emanated from the Lord, from the Vedas? No. We are interested in the absolute truth. We know for sure. Sense perception is not leading me to that. Logical perception does not lead me to that.
This is a big question. The current